The rash on my forehead prickled, and I tried to ignore the desire to scratch it. "No problem," Sandra was saying briskly. "Happy is amazing when you get used to it, but I have to admit, it takes a while to figure out all the intricacies. How's today going, anyway?" "Oh, really good." I perched on the edge of a stool, resisting the urge to look up at the camera in the corner. "It's going great, thanks. We had a really good morning exploring the grounds. Petra's asleep and the girls are..." I hesitated, thinking of her remark yesterday, but then forged on. No point in second-guessing myself all the time, and besides, she would presumably know what the girls were up to if she had checked the cameras before calling. "The girls are watching a film. I thought you wouldn't mind as they were out in the fresh air this morning. I think they needed some downtime." "Mind?" Sandra gave a little laugh. "Heavens no. I'm not one of those helicopter parents." "Would you like to speak to them?" "Absolutely. It's why I called, really. Well, and to check you were coping, of course. Do you want to put Ellie on first?" I went back through to the den and handed Ellie the phone. "It's Mummy." Her face was a little uncertain as she picked up the receiver, but she broke into smiles as she heard her mother's voice, and I went back into the kitchen, not wanting to hover too obviously, but listening with half an ear to Ellie's end of the conversation. At some point, Sandra must have asked to be put across to Maddie, for there was a short, whining complaint from Ellie, and then I heard Maddie's voice, and Ellie came padding disconsolately through to me. "I miss Mummy." Her bottom lip was wobbling. "Of course you do." I crouched down, not wanting to risk a hug that might be rejected, but trying to make myself available on her level if she wanted comforting. "And she misses you too. But we'll have lots of..." But my remark was cut off by Maddie, coming through with the phone held out and a strange expression in her black eyes. I was not sure what it was. A mix of trepidation and glee, it looked like. "Mummy wants to talk to you," she said. I took the phone.
"Rowan!"
Sandra's voice was clipped and annoyed.
"What's this I hear about you taking them into the locked garden?"
I was taken aback. What the hell? Sandra hadn't said anything about the garden being out of bounds.
"Well, I did, but..." "How dare you force your way into an area of the grounds that we expressly keep locked for the children's safety? I can't believe how irresponsible..." "Hang on a minute. I'm very sorry if I've made a mistake, Sandra, but I had no idea the walled garden was out of bounds, and I didn't force my way in anywhere. Ellie and Maddie..."
Ellie and Maddie seemed to know how to open the gate, was what I had been going to say, but Sandra didn't let me finish. Instead, she interrupted with an angry sigh of exasperation, and I fell silent, reluctant to talk over her and increase her annoyance.
"I told you to use your common sense, Rowan. If breaking into a poison garden is your idea of common..." "What?" I butted in, not caring about rudeness now. "What did you say?"
"It is a poison garden," Sandra spat.
"As you would know if you'd bothered to read the binder I provided, which you clearly did not." "A poison..."
I reached for the binder, beginning to frantically flick through the pages. The injustice stung. I had read the fucking thing, but it was 250 pages long. If there was critical information, she should have put it up front, rather than burying it in pages and pages about acceptable types of crisps and the right type of shoes to wear for PE. Just... what even is that?
"The previous owner of Heatherbrae was an analytical chemist with a speciality in biological toxins, and this was his personal..."
She stopped, clearly too pissed off with the whole situation even to find words.
"His personal testing ground, I suppose. Every single plant in that garden is toxic in some degree. Some of them extremely toxic. And many of them you don't need to ingest. Brushing past them or touching the leaves is enough.
Oh. My hand went up to the blistering rash on my forehead, which made a sudden kind of sense.
We're trying to find the best way to deal with it, but the bloody thing has heritage status or something. In the meantime, we keep it firmly locked up, and I must say it never occurred to me that you would take the children for a stroll.
It was my turn to butt in now.
Sandra?
I made my voice level and calmer and more reasonable than I really felt. I apologise unreservedly for not paying sufficient attention to that page in the binder. That is 100% on me, and I'll rectify that immediately. But you should know, it wasn't my idea to go in there. Maddie and Ellie suggested it, and they know how to open the lock without a key. There's some kind of override on the inside, and Ellie can reach it. They've clearly been in there before. That shut Sandra up. There was silence on the other end of the phone while I waited for her response. I could hear her breathing, and I wondered for a minute if I had made a bad strategic mistake in bringing up the fact that she clearly had no idea where her children had been roaming. Then she coughed.
Well, we'll say no more about it for the moment.
Can you put me back onto Maddie, please? And that was it. No, thanks for bringing it to my attention. No admission that she herself wasn't exactly winning parenting golds. But perhaps that would have been too much to hope for. I passed the phone back to Maddie, who gave me a little smile as I handed it over, her dark eyes full of malice. She took it back through to the media room, Ellie padding after her, hoping for another turn, and as Maddie's end of the conversation grew fainter, I picked up the tablet that was lying on the kitchen counter and opened Google. Then I typed in Aklis. A series of terrifying images popped up across the top of the screen. A variety of white, skull-like female faces in different states of decomposition. Some pale and beautiful, with ravaged cheeks. Others rotting and putrefying, with a stench of death coming from their rictus mouths. Beneath them were various search entries, and I clicked one at random. Aklis, pronounced Aklis, Greek goddess of death, misery, and poison, it read. I shut the screen down. Well, binder or no binder, I couldn't say I hadn't been warned. It had been right there, written on the base of the statue in the centre of the garden. I just hadn't understood the message.
I'm done.
Maddie's voice came from the media room, and pushing down my irritation, I walked back through to where the girls were crouched on the sofa, plainly waiting for me with some trepidation. I said nothing as Maddie handed back the phone, just unpaused the film and sat down at the far end of the sofa to continue watching, though their eyes kept flicking across to me, very different emotions on each face. Ellie's was anxious, waiting to be told off. She had known that they were not supposed to go into that garden, and she had allowed herself to be tempted to show her cleverness in opening the gate and letting us in. Maddie's expression was very different and harder to read, but I thought I could tell what it was. Triumph. She had wanted me to get into trouble, and I had. It was much later, over supper, as I wiped tomato sauce from Petra's cheek and swallowed my own mouthful of alphabetti spaghetti, that I said, casually, "Girls, did you know that the plants in that garden were dangerous?" Ellie's eyes flicked to Maddie, who seemed to be wavering. "What garden?" she said at last, though her tone didn't hold a question mark. She was buying herself more time, I thought. I gave her my sweetest smile and shot her a look that said, "Don't fuck with me, dear." "The poison garden," I said. "The one with the statue. Your mum said we weren't supposed to go in there." "Did you know?"
"We're not allowed in without a grown-up," Maddie said evasively.
"Ellie, did you know?" I turned to her, but she refused to meet my eyes, and at last I took her chin, forcing her to look at me.
"Ow!"
"Ellie, look at me. Did you know those plants were dangerous?" She said nothing, just tried to twist her chin away. "Did you know?"
"Yes," she whispered at last. "Another girl died."
It was not the answer I had been expecting, and I stopped, letting her chin go in my surprise. "What did you say?"
"There was another little girl,"
Ellie repeated, still not meeting my eyes.
"She died. Jean told us."
"Jesus!" The word slipped out without my realising, and I saw from Maddie's smirk that that too would be stored up to repeat to Sandra next time she called. "What happened when?"
"A long time ago," Maddie said.
It was plain that, unlike Ellie, she did not mind talking about the subject. In fact, there was even a kind of relish in her tone.
"Before we were born. She was the little girl of the man who lived here before us. It's why he went soft."
For a moment, I didn't understand the last word, but then it came to me. She was saying the word soft, but with a Scottish accent, repeating whatever Jean McKenzie had said to her. "He went soft, soft in the head, you mean?"
"Yes, he had to be put away. Not straight away, but after a while. Living here with her ghost," Maddie said, matter-of-factly. "She used to wake him in the middle of the night with her crying. After she was gone. Jean told us. So after a while, he stopped sleeping. He just used to pace backwards and forwards all night long. Then he went mad. People do go mad, you know, if you stop them from sleeping for long enough. They go mad. And then they die."
Pacing. The word gave me a sharp jolt. And for a second I didn't know what to say. Then I remembered something else.
"Maddie,"
I swallowed, trying to figure out how to phrase my question. "Maddie, is that what you meant before when you said the ghosts wouldn't like it?"
"I don't know what you mean."
Her face was stiff and expressionless, and she had pushed her plate away. "When you hugged me that day I first came, you said the ghosts wouldn't like it."
"No, I didn't," she said stonily. "I didn't hug you. I don't hug people."
But she had overreached herself with that last remark. I might have believed that she hadn't said what I thought I'd heard, but there was no way I could forget that stiff, desperate little hug. She had hugged me, and the knowledge suddenly made me sure of what I'd heard, too. I shook my head. You know there's no such thing as ghosts, right? No matter what genes told you, it's just rubbish, Maddie. It's just people who are sad about other people who have died and wish they could see them again, so they make up stories and they imagine they see them. But it's all nonsense.
I don't know what you're talking about, Maddie said,
and she shook her head so that her straight dark hair flapped against her cheeks.
There aren't any ghosts, Maddie. I promise you that. They're just make-believe. They can't hurt you, or me, or any of us.
Can I get down now?
She asked flatly, and I sighed. Don't you want pudding?
I'm not hungry.
Go on, then. She slid from her chair, and Ellie followed, her obedient little shadow. I put a yoghurt in front of Petra and then went round to clear the girls' plates. Ellie's was just the usual mess of toast crusts and spaghetti sauce with as many peas as possible hidden under her spoon. But Maddie's... I was about to scrape it into the compost bin when I stopped, turning the plate. She had eaten most of her supper, but a dozen or so alphabet letters had been left, and now I saw, just as I was about to throw them away, that the letters seemed to be arranged into words. The phrase was sliding diagonally across the plate where I had tipped it towards the compost bin, but it was still just readable.
We hate you.
We hate you. Somehow, seeing it there in the innocence of alphabetti spaghetti was more upsetting than almost anything else.
I scraped the plate with a violence that made the spaghetti ricochet off the inside of the compost bin lid and then threw it into the sink where it hit a glass and they both shattered, sending shards of glass and spatters of tomato sauce flying. Fuck! Fuck, 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 fuck! I hate you too! I wanted to scream after their retreating backs as they padded quietly away into the media room to fire up Netflix. I hate you too, you vile, creepy little shits! But it wasn't true. Not completely. I did hate them in that moment. But I saw myself, too. A prickly little girl full of emotions too big for her small frame, emotions she could not understand or contain.
I hate you,
I remembered sobbing into my pillow after my mother threw away my favourite teddy bear. Too old, too shabby, too babyish for a big girl like me, according to her.
I hate you so much. But it wasn't true then, either. I loved my mother. I loved her so much that it suffocated her. Or that was the impression she gave.
All those years of small hands being disentangled from sleeves and skirts and untwined from around necks. That's enough now, you'll mess up my hair. And, oh, for goodness sake, your hands are filthy. And stop being a baby now, a big girl like you. All those years of being too needy and too grabby and too grubby-handed. Of trying to be better and neater. And just more lovable. She didn't want me. Well, that's what it felt like at times. But she was all I had. Maddie had so much more than me. A father, three sisters, a beautiful house, two dogs. But I recognised her sadness and her anger and her frustration. An angry little dark changeling among her blonde sisters. We even looked alike. When she looked at me with that touch of triumph in her dark boot button eyes. I had recognised something else, too. And now I knew what it was. It was a flash of myself in those eyes. A flicker of my own dark brown eyes and my own determination. Maddie was a woman with a plan, just like I was. The question was, what was it? I was so tired after my near sleepless night the night before that I bundled the girls upstairs to bed ridiculously early. To my surprise, they didn't protest, and I found myself wondering if they were as tired as I was. Petra went down with no more than a token protest, and when I went to check on Maddie and Ellie, they were both in their pyjamas, or almost there in the case of Ellie. I helped her figure out which way her top went, and then shepherded them into the bathroom, where they did their teeth obediently as I stood over them. "Do you want a story?" I asked, as I tucked them into their little beds, and I saw Ellie's eyes flicker to Maddie, looking for permission to speak, but Maddie shook her head.
"No, we're too big for stories."
"I know that's not true," I said with a little laugh. "Everyone likes bedtime stories." Any other night, I might have sat myself down, cracked open a book, and begun anyway in defiance of Maddie's refusals. But I was tired. I was so tired. Being with the girls all day from sun up to sunset was exhausting in a completely different way to the nursery, a way I hadn't fully anticipated or understood until now. I thought of all the mums who had dropped their children off talking about how exhausted they were, and the slight contempt I'd felt for them when all they had to deal with was one or two at the most. But now I realised what they'd been talking about. It wasn't as physical as the work at the nursery or as intense, but it was the way it stretched endlessly, the way the kneading never stopped. And there was never a moment when you could hand them over to your colleague and run away for a quick fag break to just be yourself. I was never off duty here, or at least not for the foreseeable future. "I tell you what," I said at last, seeing Ellie's chin wobble, "how about I put on an audiobook?" Pulling out my phone, I managed to navigate the Happy Media system and then to the audio files, where I scrolled through the list of titles. The organisation was confusing. There didn't seem to be any distinction between the different file types, and Mozart was listed alongside Moana, Thelonious Monk and L.M. Montgomery, but as I scrolled, I felt a little warm head thrust up under my arm, and Ellie's small hand took the phone.
"I can show you," she said,
and pressed an icon that looked like a stylized panda bear, and then another icon that looked like a flattened out V, but which I realized as Ellie pressed it, must be supposed to indicate books. A list of children's audiobooks flashed up. "Do you know which one you want?" I asked, but she shook her head, and scanning the list, I selected one at random. The Sheep Pig by Dick King Smith, which seemed perfect. Long, calming, and nice and wholesome. I pressed play, selected Girl's Bedroom from the list of speakers, and waited for the first notes of the introductory music. Then I tucked Ellie in. "Do you want a kiss?" I said. She didn't reply, but I thought I saw a little nod, and I bent and swiftly kissed her baby soft cheek before she could change her mind. Next, I went across to Maddie. She was lying there with her eyes tight shut, though I could see her pupils moving beneath the paper thinness of her lids, and I could tell from her breathing she was nowhere near asleep. "Do you want a good night kiss, Maddie?" I asked. knowing what the answer would be, but wanting to be fair. She said nothing. I stood for a moment, listening to her breathing, and then said, "Good night, girls. Sweet dreams, and sleep well for school tomorrow." And then I left, shutting the door behind me. Out in the hallway, I breathed a tremulous, almost incredulous sigh of relief. Could it be true? Were they really all safely in bed, washed, brushed, and no one screaming? It seemed, compared to last night anyway, deceptively easy. But perhaps I had turned a corner with them. Perhaps that first angry protest was just shock at being away from their mum with a comparative stranger in charge. Maybe a nice day together and a phone call from Sandra was all it had taken. My heart softened as I checked the lock on the utility room door, did battle with the front door panel and the lights in the hall, and then climbed the flights of stairs to my own room with a weariness I was having increasing trouble overcoming. I was passing Bill and Sandra's room when I thought I heard something. Or perhaps saw it. It was hard to know. A little flicker of movement in the sliver of darkness between the door and the frame. Was it just my imagination? I was so tired, it could be my mind playing tricks on me. Very, very quietly, not wanting to disturb the girls, I pushed the door with the flat of my hand, listening to it shushing across the thick silver carpet. Inside, the room was quite empty and still. The curtains were undrawn. And though in London it would have been getting dark, here we were so far north that the sun was only just sliding behind the mountains. Livid squares of reddish light slanted obliquely across the floor, turning the carpet into a kind of fiery chessboard, though the corners of the room were in deep, impenetrable shadow. I let my hands slip over the thick, crisp cotton of their duvet cover as I passed their bed, glancing into the shadows, feeling my pulse quicken with the audacity of this intrusion. If Sandra were watching through the monitor now, what would she see? Someone prowling around her bedroom, fingering her bed linen. I thought I heard a noise. I practiced the excuse in my head, but I knew it was no longer true. I had been looking for an excuse. There was a pair of earrings on the bedside table closest to the door. This must be Sandra's side, which meant that Bill slept. I tiptoed round the bed, keeping to the shadows as far as I could. I knew from peering at Maddie and Ellie's bedroom monitor that the resolution of the images in darkness was not good. It was very hard to make out anything beyond the little pool of warm light cast by the nightlight. And in here, the contrast between the squares of sunset and the deep shadow in the rest of the room was even greater. Very, very quietly, I slid open Bill's bedside table drawer and looked down at the tumble of personal possessions inside. A watch with a broken strap, a slew of loose change, a few tickets, a hay fever spray, a comb. I'm not sure what I had been hoping for, but if it was to get a sense of the person who lived here, slept here, laid his head on the crisp white pillow, I was disappointed. It was strikingly impersonal. I thought of that meeting in the kitchen, of his denimed leg slipping between my thighs with a confident intrusiveness born of long practice, and I felt sick. Who are you? Suddenly, I had to get out. and I hurried across the checkered carpet, no longer caring about keeping to the shadows or whether Sandra or Bill saw me. Let them see. Both of them. Up in my room, I closed the door with a feeling of barricading myself away from the rest of the house. As the curtains drew themselves robotically over the windowpane, my last glimpse of the outside world was of the bloody streaks of sunset fading behind the far-off peaks of the Cairngorms, and of a light in Jack's window shining steadfastly across the darkening courtyard. I thought of him as I let my head sink into the goose-feather softness of the pillow. I thought of his hands that morning, the ease with which he restrained the two excited dogs, the way he dominated them, keeping them at heel. And I thought of the key, and how he had gone unerringly to the place where it had been hidden, a place I had already checked. But then I remembered other things, his kindness that first night in coming to check on me, and his voice over the baby monitor putting Petra to sleep, crooning to her with a gentleness that made my stomach clench in a strange way I could not pin down. There had been no deception there, no pretense. That gentleness was real, I was certain of it. And I wondered if it had been him in the kitchen that night instead of Bill. Would I have lurched queasily from the room with panicked disgust? Or would I have reacted very differently? Opened my legs to his, perhaps. Leaned forward. Blushed. But even as the thought came to me, making my cheeks flush in the darkness, I remembered again kneeling on the floor of the utility room, sweeping my phone torch beneath the washing machine. That key had not been there. The intervening hours had not made me doubt that fact any more, quite the reverse. I was totally sure now, which meant... I rubbed my hands over my face, resisting the urge to scratch the fading itch left by the creeper. I was being absurd. There was no earthly reason why he would steal that key simply to unnerve me. He had his own set, after all, and his thumbprint was authorised for use on the front door, though there was probably a record every time someone used that lock, my subconscious whispered. A record that wouldn't exist with an old-fashioned lock and key. But no, no, it made no sense. Why would he go to the trouble of making a key disappear for a few hours? What would he gain from it? Nothing, except to put me on my guard. And there was my necklace, too. My necklace, which I had still not found, though I'd not had time to look properly. That could not have been Jack, surely. This was paranoia, all of it. Things get lost all the time. Keys fall down, necklaces get tidied away into pockets and drawers and unearthed days later. There would be a perfectly reasonable explanation for all of this, one that did not require a conspiracy theory. I pushed the thought down as I rolled over and let sleep cover me like a heavy blanket. My last thought, as sleep claimed me, was not of Jack, nor of the key, nor even of Bill. It was of the footsteps in the attic, and the old man who had lost his daughter to his poison garden.
There was another little girl.
My hand went vainly to my throat, trying to hold a necklace that wasn't there. And then, at last, I slept. I woke to the sound of screams and a confusion so loud that my first instinct was to clap my hands over my ears, even as I bolted upright in my bed, staring wildly around, shivering with cold. The lights were on, all of them turned up to their brightest, most eye-searing maximum, and the room was icy cold. But the noise? Jesus, the noise! It was music, or at least I supposed so, but so loud and distorted that the tune was unrecognisable, the howling and squealing coming from the speakers in the ceiling, turning it into a formless din. For a minute, I couldn't think what the hell to do. Then I ran to the panel on the wall and began pushing buttons, my pulse pounding in my ears, the screeching, misshapen music like a howl in my head. Nothing happened except that the lights in the closets turned on to join the rest. "Music off," I shouted. "Speakers off. Volume down." Nothing. Nothing. From downstairs I could hear furious barking and terrified steam train shrieks coming from Petra's room, and at last, abandoning my attempts with the panel, I grabbed my dressing gown and fled. The music was just as loud outside the children's rooms, louder even, for the narrow walls of the hallway seemed to funnel it. And the lights were on down here too, showing me a glimpse of Petra through the nursery doorway, standing up in her cot, her hair tousled on end, screaming in fear. I snatched her up and ran to the girls' room at the end of the corridor, shoving the door open to find Maddie curled in a fetal position in her bed, her hands over her ears, and Ellie nowhere to be seen. "Where's Ellie?" I bellowed above the noise of the music and Petra's fire engine wails. Maddie looked up, her face blank with fear, her hands still clapped over her ears, and I grabbed her wrist and hauled her to her feet. "Where's Ellie?" I yelled directly into her face, and she pulled away and fled down the stairs with me following. In the entrance hall, the noise was just as bad. And there, in the middle of the Persian rug at the foot of the stairs, was Ellie. She was crouched into a little ball, her arms wrapped around her head. All about her leapt the terrified dogs released from their beds in the utility room, adding their frantic barks to the cacophony. "Ellie," I shouted, "what happened? Did you press something?" She looked up at me, blank and uncomprehending, and I shook my head and then ran over to the tablet sitting on the metal breakfast bar. I opened up the home management app, but when I tapped in my access code, nothing happened. Had I misremembered it? I tapped it in again, the dog's furious woofs like a jackhammer of sound against my skull. Still nothing. "You are locked," I had time to read, before the screen lit up momentarily and then died. A red battery warning flashing for an instant before it went black. Fuck! I slammed my hand onto the wall panel and the lights above the cooker turned on and a screen on the fridge began blasting out YouTube, but the music volume didn't reduce. I could feel my heart thumping wildly in my chest, growing more and more panicked as I realised I had no way of turning this thing off. What a stupid fucking idea! A smart house? This was the least smart thing I could imagine. The children were shivering now, Petra still letting out ear-splitting shrieks of distress next to my ear as the dogs ran in circles around us, and I tried the power button on the tablet, more helplessly, not expecting the thing to work, and it didn't. The screen was completely dark. My phone was upstairs, but could I leave the terrified children long enough to fetch it? I was staring round, wondering what on earth I was going to do, when I felt a touch on my shoulder. I jumped so wildly I almost dropped Petra and swung round accusingly to find Jack Grant standing so close behind me that my shoulder touched his bare chest as I turned. We both took an involuntary step back, me nearly tripping over a stool. He was naked from the waist up and had plainly been asleep, judging by his rumpled hair, and he bellowed something, pointing at the door, but I shook my head, and he came close, cupping his hands around my ear.
"What's happening? I could hear the din from the stables."
"I have no idea," I yelled back. "I was asleep. Maybe one of the girls touched something. I can't get it to turn off."
"Can I try?"
he shouted, and I felt like laughing in his face. Could he? I would kiss him if he succeeded. I shoved the tablet at him almost aggressively. "Be my guest." He tried to turn the tablet on and realised, as I had, that it was out of power. Then he went to the utility room and opened up a cupboard there, the one where the Wi-Fi router was kept, along with the electricity meter. I'm not completely sure what he did in there. I was too busy comforting an increasingly distraught Petra. But all of a sudden, everything went pitch black and the sound stopped with an abruptness that was disorientating. I found my ears were ringing with the aftermath. In the silence, I could hear Ellie's panicked, gasping sobs and Maddie rocking back and forth. Petra, in my arms, stopped crying, and I felt her little body go stiff with surprise. Then she let out a gurgling laugh.
"Night, night," she said.
Then there was a click, and the lights came back on, less brightly this time, and fewer of them.
"There,"
Jack said. He came back through, wiping his forehead, the dogs padding in his wake, suddenly calm again.
"It's gone back to default settings now. Bloody hell. Okay."
There was sweat on his forehead in spite of the chill in the air, and when he sat down at the kitchen counter, the tablet in his hands, I could see his hands were shaking. Mine, as I set Petra beside Maddie, were trembling too. Jack plugged the tablet in, and now he put it down to wait until it had enough charge to turn on. "Thank you," I said weakly. Ellie was still sobbing in the hallway. "Ellie, there's no need to cry, sweetie. It's okay now. Look, I crossed the kitchen and began rummaging in the cupboards. "Look, here we are. Have a jammy dodger. You too, Maddie."
"We've brushed our teeth,"
Maddie said blankly, and I suppressed a hysterical laugh. "Fuck teeth," was what I wanted to say, but I managed to bite it back. "I think just this once it'll be okay. We've all had a shock. Sugar is good for shock."
"Aye, that's true,"
Jack said rather solemnly.
"Back in the old day, they'd make you drink sweet tea. But since I don't really like sugar in my tea, I'll have a jammy dodger too. Thanks, Rowan."
"See?" I handed one to Jack and bit into one myself.
"It's fine,"
I spoke around the crumbs. "Here you go, Maddie." She took it warily, and then shoved it in her own mouth as if I was about to take it away again. Ellie ate hers more slowly.
"Mine!"
Petra shouted, holding up her arms. I gave a mental shrug. I wasn't going to win any prizes for child nutrition, but I no longer gave a fuck about that. Breaking one in half, I gave her a piece of biscuit too, and then threw a chunk to each of the dogs for good measure.
"Okay, we're up and running again,"
Jack said, as Petra began joyfully stuffing the biscuit into her mouth. For a minute, I didn't realise what he meant, and then I saw that he was holding the tablet, the screen casting a glow onto his face.
"I've got the app open. Try your PIN number first."
I took the tablet from him, selected my username from the little drop-down menu, and put in the PIN number Sandra had given me for the home management app.
You are locked out,
flashed up on the screen. And then when I tapped the little I button next to the message,
sorry, you have entered your happy number incorrectly too many times and are now locked out. Please enter an admin password to override this or wait 4 hours.
Ah, Jack said ruefully. Easy mistake to make in the circumstances.
But wait, I said, annoyed. Hang on, that makes no sense. I only entered my passcode once. How can it lock me out for that?
It doesn't, Jack said. You get 3 goes and it warns you, but I suppose with all the noise...
I only entered it once, I repeated. And then when he didn't reply, I said more forcefully,
once.
Okay, okay, Jack said mildly. But he looked at me sideways beneath his fringe, something a little appraising in his eyes.
Let me try.
I handed him the tablet, feeling irrationally annoyed. It was clear that he didn't believe me. So what had happened then? Had someone been trying to log in under my username? As I watched, Jack switched users and entered his own PIN. The screen lit up briefly, and then he was inside the app. His screen was laid out differently to mine, I saw. He had some permissions that I didn't, access to the cameras in the garage and outside, but not to those in the children's bedroom and playroom as I did. The icons for those rooms were greyed out and unavailable. But when he clicked on the kitchen, he was able to dim the lights by tapping on the controls on the app. The realization was like a little shock. Hang on, the words blurted out before I had thought through how to phrase it. You can control the lights in here from the app.
Only if I'm here,
he said, clicking through to another screen.
If you're a master user, that's Sandra and Bill, basically, you can control everything remotely, but the rest of us can only control the rooms we're in. It's some sort of geolocation thing. If you're close enough to the panel in the room, you get access to that system.
It made sense, I supposed. If you were close enough to reach a light switch, why not give you access to the rest of the room's controls? But on the other hand, how close was close? We were directly beneath Maddie and Ellie's room here. Could he control the lights in there from his phone down here? What about outside, in the yard? But I caught myself. This was pointless. He didn't need to access the controls from the yard. He had a set of keys. Except, what better way to make someone think you weren't involved when really you were? I shook my head. I had to stop this. It could have been Ellie, fiddling with the iPad in the middle of the night. Perhaps she had come down to play Candy Crush or watch a movie and accidentally pressed something she shouldn't have. It could have been some kind of pre-programmed setting that I'd switched on without realising, the app version of a butt dial. It could have been Bill and Sandra, if it came to that. If I was going to be paranoid, I might as well go the whole hog after all. Why stop at random handymen? Why not extend the suspicion to everyone? The fact that they had only just recruited me and had least reason of anyone to drive me away was neither here nor there. Or for that matter, there were other users who knew what permissions Rhiannon might have. I became suddenly aware that Jack was watching me, his arms folded across his very naked chest. I caught a glimpse of myself reflected in the glass wall of the kitchen, braless in my skimpy top, with my face still pillow crumpled, and my hair like I'd been dragged through a bush backwards. So far from the neat, buttoned-up professional image I tried to project during the day that the contrast was laughable. I felt my cheeks grow hot. God, I'm so sorry, Jack. You didn't have to... I ground to a halt. He looked down at himself in turn, seeming to realise his own state of half-dress, and gave an awkward laugh, a flush of red staining his cheekbones.
"I should have put something on. I thought you were all being murdered in your bed, so I didn't really stop to dress. Listen, you get the girls to sleep, I'll put a shirt on, settle the dogs, and then I'll run some virus software on the app."
"You don't have to do that tonight," I protested, but he shook his head.
"No, I want to. I can't for the life of me see why it's playing up, and I'll not have you all out of your beds a second time in one night. But you don't need to wait up for me. I can lock up after myself. Or I can sleep here, if you're worried."
He gestured to the couch.
"I can bring over a blanket. No."
It came out sharper and more emphatic than I had meant, and I struggled to cover my overreaction. "No, I mean, you don't have to do that. Honestly, I'll..."
"Shut up, you stupid girl,"
I swallowed. "I'll get the girls to bed and come back down. I won't be long." At least, I hoped I wouldn't. Petra was looking worryingly wide awake. It was maybe an hour later, after I'd tucked the girls back into bed for the second time that night and soothed Petra into a state of not quite sleeping, but at least almost there, that I made my way back down to the kitchen. I was half expecting Jack to have packed up and gone, but he was waiting for me, a checked flannel shirt on this time and a cup of tea in his hand.
"Do you want one?"
he asked. For a minute, I wasn't sure what he was talking about. Then he raised his cup and I shook my head. "No, thanks. I won't sleep if I have anything caffeinated now."
"Fair enough. Are you okay?"
I don't know why it was that simple question that did it. Maybe it was the genuine concern in his voice, or the enormous relief of being with another adult after so many hours spent alone with the children. Maybe it was just the shock of what happened finally setting in. But I burst into tears.
"Hey!"
He stood awkwardly, shoving his hands in his pockets and then taking them out again. And then, as if making up his mind, he crossed the kitchen quickly and put an arm around me. I turned, I couldn't help it, and buried my face against his shoulder, feeling my whole body shake with the sobs.
Hey there,"
he said again, but this time his voice came to me through his chest wall, deeper and softer, and somehow slower. His hand hovered above my shoulder, and then settled very gently on my hair.
"Rowan, it's going to be okay."
It was that one word, Rowan, that brought me back to my senses. Reminded me of who I was, and who he was, and what I was doing here. I gulped furiously and took a step back, wiping my eyes on my sleeve. "Oh my God, Jack, I'm so sorry." My voice was still shaky and rough from crying, and he put out his hand. For a minute, I thought he was going to touch my cheek, and I wasn't sure whether I wanted to pull away or lean into his caress. Then I realised he was offering me a tissue. I took it and blew my nose. "God," I managed at last, and then I moved across to the kitchen sofa and sat down, feeling my legs about to give way. "Jack, you must think I'm a complete idiot."
"I think you're a woman who's had a bad scare and was keeping it together for the bairns. And I also think..."
He stopped, biting his lip at that. I frowned.
"What?" "No, it doesn't matter."
"It does." Suddenly, I wanted him to say whatever it was he had been about to say very badly indeed, even though I was more than a little afraid of what it might be. "Tell me," I pressed, and he sighed. I shouldn't say it. I don't badmouth my employers. Oh, so not what I had been half fearing then. Now I was just plain curious. But? He broke off, chewing his lip, and then seemed to make up his mind. Ah, fuck it. I've said too much already. I think that Sandra and Bill should never have put you in this position. It's not fair on you, and it's not fair on the children, if it comes to that. Oh. Now it was my turn to feel awkward. What could I say to that? I knew what I signed up for, I said at last.
Aye, but did you?
He sat back down beside me, making the sofa cushion squeak.
I bet they weren't 100% honest about yon one, eh?
Who, Maddie? He nodded, and I sighed. Okay, no, you're right, they weren't. Or not totally, but I'm a childcare professional, Jack. It's nothing I haven't encountered before.
Really?
Okay, I maybe haven't encountered anyone quite like Maddie, but she's just a little girl, Jack. We're getting to know each other, that's all. We had a good day today. It wasn't quite true, though, was it? She had tried to get me sacked, first by luring me into that bloody poison garden, and second by tattling on me to her mother in a way designed to make me look as bad as possible. Jack, is there any way it could have been... I stopped myself and amended what I had been going to say. One of the kids who set all that stuff off. They were playing with the tablet earlier. Is there any way they could have... I don't know, pre-programmed it by accident? Or deliberately, I thought, but did not say. But he shook his head.
I don't think so. There'd be a record of a login. And anyway, from what you said, it overrode every single speaker and lighting system in the house. None of the users on this tablet have access rights to do that. You'd need an admin password for that.
So, you'd have to be Bill or Sandra, basically. Is that what you're saying? The thought was very odd, and my doubts must have shown on my face. Could the kids have got hold of their PIN somehow?
Maybe, but they're not even down as users on this tablet. Look.
He clicked the little drop-down menu on the Home Management app and listed the possible users for this device. Me, him, Jean, and a final one marked Guest. That was it. So what you're saying is, I spoke slowly, trying to think it through, to get an admin level of access, you wouldn't just need Sandra's PIN, you'd need her phone?
Pretty much, yeah.
He pulled out his own phone and showed me his access panel.
See? I'm the only user set up on my phone. It's the way it's configured.
And to set up new users on a device,
you need a specific code. Sandra would have given you one when you came here, no?
I nodded. And let me guess, the code can only be generated by...
By an admin user, yep. That's about the size of it.
It made no sense. Had Sandra or Bill done this somehow? It wasn't beyond the bounds of possibility. I had read up on the app when Sandra had first told me about it, and from what I could make out, the whole point of the system was that you could control it from anywhere with internet access. Check the CCTV when you were on holiday in Verbier. Turn on the lights when you were upstairs and wanted to come down. Lower the heating when you were stuck in a traffic jam in Inverness. But why would they? I remembered what Jack had said when I went to take the girls up to bed. And though I knew I was clutching at straws, I still had to ask the question. And the virus scans? He shook his head.
Nothing on the tablet, at any rate. It's clean as a whistle.
Shit. I ran my hands through my hair, and he put his hand on my shoulder, touching me again, lightly. But I felt a kind of static charge run between us, making the hairs on my arm prickle, and I shivered lightly. Jack made a rueful face, misinterpreting my action.
"Look at me blethering away. You must be cold and tired. I'll let you get to bed."
It wasn't true. Not anymore. I wasn't cold. And suddenly I was very far from tired, too. What I wanted was a drink. With him. And preferably one as strong as possible. I didn't usually drink spirits, but it was on the tip of my tongue to mention the bottle of scotch in the cupboard in the kitchen. But I knew that if I did, I would be starting something very stupid indeed. Something I might not be able to stop. "Okay," I said at last. "That's probably good advice. Thank you, Jack." I stood up, and he did too, setting down his tea and stretching until I heard his joints crack, and a little sliver of flat stomach showed between the bottom of his shirt and his waistband. And then I did something that surprised even myself, something I had not intended to do until the instant I found myself doing it. I stood on tiptoes, and pulling his shoulder down towards me, I kissed his cheek. I felt the leanness of his skin, the roughness of a day-old beard beneath my lips, and the warmth of him. And I felt something at the core of me clench with wanting. When I stepped back, his expression was blank surprise, and for a moment I thought I had made a horrible mistake, and the butterflies in my stomach intensified to the point of queasiness. But then his mouth widened into a broad grin, and he bent and kissed me back very gently, his lips warm and very soft against my cheek.
"Good night, Rowan. You're sure you'll be all right now? You don't need me to stay?"
There was an infinitesimal pause before the last word.
"I'm sure."
He nodded, and then he turned and left by the utility room door. I locked it after him, the key turning with a reassuring clunk, and then I tucked the key back into its resting place and stood watching his silhouette against the light streaming from the stable windows as he walked back to his little flat. As he mounted the stairs to his front door, he turned and lifted a hand in farewell. Even though I was not sure he would be able to see me in the darkness, I raised mine in return. Then he was gone. The door closed behind him, and the outside light clicked off, leaving a shocking, inky darkness in its wake. And I was left standing there, my skin shivering and fighting the urge to touch the place on my cheek where his lips had been with the tips of my fingers. I did not know what he had meant when he offered to stay, what he had been hoping, expecting. But I knew what I had wanted, and I knew that I had come very close to saying yes.
"I know what you're thinking, Mr. Wrexham. None of this is helping my case." And that's what Mr. Gates thought too. "Because we know where this leads, you and I, don't we?
To me, slipping out of the house on a rainy summer night, baby monitor in one hand, running across the courtyard and up the stairs to the stable block flat. And to a child's body lying. But no, I can't think about that, or I'll start crying again. And if you lose it in here, you really lose it. I know that now."
I never knew there were so many ways to deal with pain so unbearable that it cannot be endured.
But in here, I have seen them all. The women who cut their skin and tear out their hair and smear themselves with blood and shit and piss. The ones who snort and shoot and smoke their way to oblivion. The ones who sleep and sleep and sleep and never get out of bed, not even for meals, until they're nothing but bones and greyish skin and despair. But I have to be honest with you. That's what Mr. Gates couldn't understand. It was acting a part that got me here in the first place. Rowan the perfect nanny with her buttoned-up cardigans, her pasted-on smile and her perfect CV. She never existed. And you know it. Behind that neat, cheerful facade was someone very different. A woman who smoked and drank and swore, and whose hand itched to slap on more than one occasion. I tried to cover her up, to neatly fold my T-shirts when my instinct was to throw them on the floor, to smile and nod when I wanted to tell the Ellencourts to fuck off. And when the police took me in for questioning, Mr. Gates wanted me to keep on pretending, keep on hiding the real me. But where did that pretense get me? Here. I have to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Because to leave out these parts would be less than the whole truth. To tell you only the parts that exonerate me would make me slip back into the old...